This is Audible.
Bantam Audio Publishing presents a Dell production of Shiloh by Phyllis Reynolds Naylor. This program is dedicated to Frank and Trudy Madden and a dog named Clover. The day Shiloh come, we're having us a big Sunday dinner. Dara Lynn's dipping bread in her glass of cold tea the way she likes, and Becky pushes her beans up over the edge of her plate in her rush to get them down. Ma gives us her scolding look. "Just once in my life," she says, "I'd like to see a bite of food go direct from the dish into somebody's mouth without a detour of any kind." She's looking at me when she says it, though. "It isn't that I don't like fried rabbit. Like it fine. I just don't want to bite down on buckshot is all. And I'm checking each piece."
"I looked that rabbit over good, Marty, and you won't find any buckshot in that thigh," Dad says, buttering his bread. "I shot him in the neck."
Well, somehow I wish he hadn't said that. I push the meat from one side of my plate to the other, through the sweet potatoes and back again. "Did it die right off?" I ask, knowing I can't eat it all unless it had.
"Soon enough."
"You shoot its head clean off?" Dara Lynn asks. She's like that. Dad chews real slow before he answers.
"Not quite," he says, and goes on eating.
Which is when I leave the table. The best thing about Sundays is we eat our big meal at noon. Once you get your belly full, you can walk all over West Virginia before you're hungry again. Any other day, you start out after dinner, you've got to come back when it's dark. I take the .22 rifle Dad had given me in March on my 11th birthday and set out up the road to see what I can shoot. Like to find me an apple hanging way out on a branch, see if I can bring it down. Line up a few cans on a rail fence and shoot them off. Never shoot at anything moving, though. Never had the slightest wish. We live high up in the hills, above Friendly. But hardly anybody knows where that is. Friendly's near Sistersville, which is halfway between Wheeling and Parkersburg. It used to be, my daddy told me. Sistersville was one of the best places you could live in the whole state. You ask me the best place to live? I'd say right where we are. A little four-room house with hills on three sides. Afternoon is my second best time to go up in the hills, though. Morning's the best, especially in summer. Early, early morning. On one morning, I saw three kinds of animals, not counting cats, dogs, frogs, cows, and horses. Saw a groundhog, saw a doe with two fawns, and saw a gray fox with a reddish head. Bet his daddy was a gray fox and his ma was a red one. My favorite place to walk is just across this rattly bridge where the road curves by the old Shiloh schoolhouse and follows the river. River to one side, trees the other, sometimes a house or two. And this particular afternoon, I'm about halfway up the road along the river, when I see something out of the corner of my eye. Something moves. I look, and about 15 yards off, there's this short-haired dog, white with brown and black spots. He's not making any kind of noise, just slinking along with his head down, watching me. Tail between his legs, like he's hardly got the right to breathe. A beagle, maybe a year or two old. I stop, and the dog stops. Looks like he's been caught doing something awful, when I can tell all he really wants is to follow along beside me. "Here, boy," I say, slapping my thigh. Dog goes down on his stomach, groveling about in the grass. I laugh and start over toward him. He's got an old, worn-out collar on, probably older than he is. I bet it belonged to another dog before him. "Come on, boy," I say, putting out my hand. The dog gets up and backs off, don't even whimper, like he's lost his bark. Something really hurts inside you when you see a dog cringe like that. You know somebody's been kicking at him, beating on him maybe. "It's okay, boy," I say, coming a little closer. But still, he backs off. So, I just take my gun and follow the river. Every so often I look over my shoulder, and there he is, the beagle. I stop, he stops. I can see his ribs. Not real bad, but he isn't plumped out or anything. There's a broken branch hanging from a limb out over the water, and I'm wondering if I can bring it down with one shot. I raise my gun, and then I think how the sound might scare the dog off. I decide I don't want to shoot my gun much that day. It's a slow river. You walk beside it, you figure it's not even moving. If you stop, though, you can see leaves and things going along. Now and then a fish jumps. Big fish. Bass, I think. Dog's still trailing me. Tail tucked in. Funny how he don't make a sound. Finally, I sit on a log, put my gun at my feet, and wait. Back down the road, the dog sits too. Sits right in the middle of it, head on his paws. Here, boy, I say again and pat my knee. He wiggles just a little, but he don't come. Maybe it's a she-dog. Here, girl, I say. Dog still don't come. I decide to wait the dog out. But after 3 or 4 minutes on the log, it gets boring and I start off again. So does the beagle. Don't know where you'd end up if you followed the river all the way. Heard somebody say it curves about, comes back on itself. But if it didn't, and I got home after dark, I'd get a good whopping. So I always go as far as the ford, where the river spills across the path, and then I head back. When I turn around and the dog sees me coming, he goes off into the woods. I figure that's the last I'll see of the beagle, and I get halfway down the road again before I look back. There he is. I stop, he stops, I go, he goes. And then, hardly thinking on it, I whistle. It's like pressing a magic button. The beagle comes barreling toward me, legs going lickety-split, long ears flopping, tail sticking up like a flagpole. This time when I put out my hand, he licks all my fingers and jumps up against my leg, making little yelps in his throat. He can't get enough of me. Like I'd been saying no all along, and now I'd said yes, he could come. It's a he-dog, like I'd thought. Hey, boy, you're really something now, ain't you? I'm laughing as the beagle makes circles around me. I squat down and the dog licks my face, my neck. Where'd he learn to come if you whistled, to hang back if you didn't? I'm so busy watching the dog, I don't even notice it started to rain. Don't bother me. Don't bother the dog, neither. I'm looking for the place I first saw him. Does he live here, I wonder? Or the house on up the road? Each place we pass, I figure he'll stop. Somebody come out and whistle, maybe. But nobody comes out, and the dog don't stop. Keeps coming even after we get to the old Shiloh schoolhouse. Even starts across the bridge, tail going like a propeller. He licks my hand every so often to make sure I'm still there. Mouth open like he's smiling. He is smiling. Once he follows me across the bridge, though, and on past the grist mill, I start to worry. Looks like he's fixing to follow me all the way to our house. I'm in trouble enough coming home with my clothes wet. My ma's mama died of pneumonia. We don't ever get the chance to forget it. And now I got a dog with me, and we were never allowed to have pets. If you can't afford to feed them and take them to the vet when they're sick, you've no right taking them in, Ma says. Which is true enough. I don't say a word to the beagle the rest of the way home, hoping he'll turn at some point and go back. The dog keeps coming. I get to the front stoop and say, "Go home, boy." And then I feel my heart squeeze up, the way he stops smiling, sticks his tail between his legs again, and slinks off. He goes as far as the sycamore tree, lies down on the wet grass, head on his paws. "Whose dog is that?" Ma asks when I come in. I shrug. "Just followed me is all." "Where'd it pick up with you?" Dad asks. "Up in Shiloh, across the bridge," I say. "On the road by the river? I bet that's Judd Travers' beagle," says Dad. "He got himself another hunting dog a few weeks back." "Judd got him a hunting dog? How come he don't treat him right?" I ask. "How you know he don't?" "Way the dog acts. Scared to pee, almost," I say. Ma gives me a look. "Don't seem to me he's got any marks on him," Dad says, studying him from our window. "Don't have to mark a dog to hurt him," I'm thinking.
Just don't pay him any attention and he'll go away," Dad says.
"And get out of those wet clothes," Ma tells me.
You want to follow your Grandma Slater to the grave?
I change clothes, then sit down and turn on the TV, which only has two channels. On Sunday afternoons, it's preaching and baseball. I watch baseball for an hour. Then I get up and sneak to the window. Ma knows what I'm about. That Shiloh dog still out there? She asks. I nod. He's looking at me. He sees me there at the window and his tail starts to thump. I name him Shiloh. Sunday night supper is whatever's left from noon. If nothing's left over, Ma takes cold cornmeal mush, fries up big slabs, and we eat it with Karo syrup. But this night, there's still rabbit. I don't want any, but I know Shiloh does. I wonder how long I can keep pushing that piece of rabbit around my plate. Not very long, I discover.
You gonna eat that meat or you just playing with it? Dad asks. If you don't want it, I'll take it for lunch tomorrow.
I'll eat it, I say. Don't you be giving it to that dog, says Ma. I take a tiny bite. What's the doggy gonna eat, then? Asks Becky. She's 3, which is 4 years younger than Daryl Lynn. Nothing here, that's what, says Ma. Becky and Daryl Lynn look at Dad. Now I had them feeling sorry for the beagle, too. Sometimes girl children get what they want easier than I do. But not this time.
Dog's going right back across the river when we get through eating, says Dad. If that's Judge's new dog, he probably don't have sense enough yet to find his way home again. We'll put him in the jeep and drive him over.
Don't know what else I figured Dad to say. Do I really think he's going to tell me to wait till morning, and if the beagle's still here, we can keep him? I try all kinds of ways to figure how I could get that rabbit meat off my plate and into my pocket. But Ma's watching every move I make. So I excuse myself and go outside and over to the chicken coop. It's off toward the back where Ma can't see. We keep 3 hens, and I take one of the 2 eggs that was in a nest and carry it out behind the bushes. I whistle softly. Shiloh comes loping toward me. I crack the egg and empty it out in my hands, hold my hands down low, and Shiloh eats the egg, licking my hands clean afterward. Then curling his tongue down between my fingers to get every little bit. Good boy, Shiloh, I whisper and stroke him all over. I hear the back screen slam and Dad comes out on the stoop.
Marty?
Yeah, I go around, Shiloh at my heels.
Let's take that dog home now.
Dad goes over and opens the door of the jeep. Shiloh puts his tail between his legs and just stands there. So I go around to the other side, get in, and whistle. Shiloh leaps up onto my lap, but he don't look too happy about it. For the first time, I have my arms around him. He feels warm, and when I stroke him, I can feel places on his body where he has ticks. Dog has ticks, I tell my dad.
Judd'll take them off, Dad says.
What if he don't?
It's his concern, Marty, not yours. It's not your dog. You keep to your own business.
I press myself against the back of the seat as we start down our bumpy dirt driveway toward the road. I want to be a vet someday, I tell my dad. He says. I want to be a traveling vet, the kind that has his office in a van and goes around to people's homes, don't make folks come to him. Read about it in a magazine at school.
You know what you have to do to be a vet, Dad asks.
Gotta go to school, I know that.
You've gotta have college training, like a doctor almost. Takes a lot of money to go to veterinary school.
My dream sort of leaks out like water in a paper bag. I could be a veterinarian's helper, I suggest, my second choice.
You maybe could, says Dad and points the jeep up the road into the hills.
Dusk is settling in now. Still warm, though. A warm July night. Trees look dark against the red sky. Lights coming on in a house here, another one there. I'm thinking how in any one of these houses, there's probably somebody who would take better care of Shiloh than Judd Travers would. How come this dog had to be his? The reason I don't like Judd Travers is a whole lot of reasons. Not the least is that I was in the corner store once, down in Friendly, and saw Judd cheat Mr. Wallace at the cash register. Judd gives a man a 10 and gets him to talking. Then, when Mr. Wallace gives him change, he says he give him a 20. I blink like I can't believe Judd done that. And old Mr. Wallace is all confused. So I say, "No, I think he give you a 10. Judd glares at me, whips out his wallet, and waves a $20 bill in front of my eye.
"Whose picture's on this bill, boy?" he says.
"I don't know." He gives me a look, says, "I thought so."
"That's Andrew Jackson," he says. "I had two of them in my wallet when I walked in here, and now I only got one. This here man's got the other, and I want my change."
Mr. Wallace, he's so flustered, he just digs in his money drawer and gives Judd change for a 20, and afterward I thought, what did Andrew Jackson have to do with it? Judd's so fast-talking, he can get away with anything. I don't know anybody who likes him much, but around here, folks keep to their own business, like Dad says. In Tyler County, that's important. Way it's always been, anyhow. Another reason I don't like Judd Travers is he spits tobacco out the corner of his mouth. And if he don't like you, and he sure don't like me, he sees just how close he can spit to where you're standing. Third reason I don't like him is because he was at the fairgrounds last year, same day we were, and seemed like every place I was, he was in front of me, blocking my view. Standing in front of me at the mud bog, sitting in front of me at the tractor pull, and rising right up out of his seat at the Jordan Globe of Death Motorcycle Act so's I missed the best part. Fourth reason I don't like him is because he kills deer out of season. He says he don't, but I seen him once just about dusk with a young buck strapped over the hood of his truck. He tells me the buck run in front of him on the road. He accidentally run over it, but I saw the bullet hole myself. If he got caught, he'd have to pay $200, more than he's got in the bank, I'll bet. We're in Shiloh now. Dad's crossing the bridge by the old abandoned grist mill, turning at the boarded-up school. And for the first time, I can feel Shiloh's body begin to shake. He's trembling all over. I swallow, try to say something to my dad, and have to swallow again. "How do you go about reporting someone who don't take care of his dog right?" I ask finally.
"Who are you fixing to report, Marty?"
"Judd."
"If this dog's mistreated, he's only about one out of 50,000 animals that is," Dad says. "Folks even bring him up here in the hills and let him out, figure they can live on rats and rabbits. Wouldn't be the first dog that wasn't treated right."
"But this one come to me to help him," I insist. "Knew that's why he was following me. I got hooked on him, Dad, and I want to know he's treated right."
For the first time, I can tell Dad's getting impatient with me. "Now you get that out of your head right now. If it's Travers' dog, it's no mind of ours how he treats it."
"What if it was a child?" I ask him, getting too smart for my own good. "If some kid was shaking like this dog is shaking, you wouldn't feel no pull for keeping an eye on him?"
"Marty," Dad says, now his voice is just plumb tired. "This here's a dog, not a child, and it's not our dog. I want you to quit going on about it. Hear?"
I shut up then. Let my hands run over Shiloh's body like maybe everywhere I touch I can protect him somehow. We're getting closer to the trailer where Judd lives with his other dogs, and already they're barking up a storm, hearing Dad's Jeep come up the road. Dad pulls over.
"You want to let him out?" he says.
I shake my head hard. "I'm not letting him out here till I know for sure he belongs to Judd." I'm asking for a slap in the face, but Dad don't say anything. Just gets out and goes up the boards Judd has laid out in place of a sidewalk. Judd's at the door of his trailer already, in his undershirt, peering out.
"Looks like Ray Preston," he says through the screen. "How you doing, Judd?"
Judd comes out on the little porch he's built at the side of his trailer, and they stand there and talk a while. Up here in the hills, you hardly ever get down to business right off. First you say your howdies, and then you talk about anything else but what you come for. And finally, when the mosquitoes start to bite, you say what's on your mind. But you always edge into it, not to offend. I can hear little bits and pieces floating out over the yard. The rain, the truck, the tomatoes, the price of gasoline, And all the while, Shiloh lays low in my lap, tail between his legs, shaking like a window blind in a breeze. And then the awful words.
Say, Judd, my boy was up here along the river this afternoon, and a beagle followed him home. Don't have any tags on his collar, but I'm remembering you got yourself another hunting dog and wondered if he might be yours.
I'm thinking this is a bad mistake. Maybe it isn't Judd's at all, and he's such a liar he'd say it was just to get himself still another animal to be mean to. Judd hardly lets him finish, starts off across the muddy yard in his boots.
Sure as hell bet it is, he says. I can't keep that coon dog home to save my soul. Every time I take him hunting, he runs off before I'm through. I've been out all day with the dogs, and they all come back but him.
I can hear Judd's heavy footsteps coming around the side of the Jeep, and I can smell his chewing tobacco, strong as coffee.
Yep, he says, thrusting his face in the open window. That's him, all right.
He opens the door.
Get on down here,
he says. And before I can even give the dog one last pat, Shiloh leaps off my lap onto the ground and connects with Judd's right foot. He yelps and runs off behind the trailer, tail tucked down, belly to the ground. All Judd's dogs chained out back bark like crazy. I jump out of the Jeep, too. Please don't kick him like that, I say. Some dogs just like to run.
He runs all over creation, Judd says.
I can tell he's studying me in the dark, trying to figure what's it to me. I'll keep an eye out for him, I say. Anytime I see him away from home, I'll bring him back. I promise. Just don't kick him. Judd only growls.
He could be a fine hunting dog, but he tries my patience. I'll leave him be tonight, but he wanders off again, I'll whoop the daylights out of him. Guarantee you that.
I swallow and swallow, and all the way home I can't speak a word, trying to hold the tears back. I don't sleep more than a couple hours that night. When I do, I dream of Shiloh. When I don't, I'm thinking about him out in the rain all afternoon, head on his paws, watching our door, thinking how I disappointed him, whistling like I meant something that first time, getting him to come to me, then taking him on back to Judd Travers to be kicked all over again. By 5 o'clock, when it's growing light, I know pretty much what I have to do. I have to buy that dog from Judd Travers. I don't let my mind go any further. Don't dwell on what Judd would want for Shiloh, or even whether he'd sell. Especially don't ask myself how I'm supposed to get the money. All I know is that I can think of only one way to get that dog away from Judd, and that's what I'm gonna have to do. My bed is the couch in the living room, so when Dad comes in to fix his breakfast, I pull on my jeans and go out to sit across from him in the kitchen. First, he makes himself a lunch to carry to work. He drives his Jeep to the post office in Sistersville, where he cases mail for around 200 families and delivers it, then comes back to the friendly post office, where he cases mail for 200 more, delivers that too. Route takes him about 85 miles on roads you can hardly get by on in winter.
Morning,
he says to me as he stuffs a sandwich in a sack, then starts in on his breakfast, which is wheat Chex and any fruit he can get from our peach tree. He makes himself coffee and eats the cornbread or biscuits Ma saves for him from our meal the night before. Can you think of a way I could earn myself some money? I ask him, with his froggy kind of voice that shows you aren't woke up yet. Dad takes another bite of cornbread, looks at me for a moment, then goes on studying his cereal.
Says exactly what I figure he'd say. Collect some bottles, take them in for a deposit, pick up some aluminum cans maybe for the recycling place.
I mean real money. Got to have it faster than that.
How fast?
I try to think. Wish I could earn it in a week, but no, I can't. Have to go out every day for a whole summer collecting cans and bottles to have much of anything at all. A month, maybe, I tell him.
I'll ask along my mail route, but don't know many folks with money to spare, he says. Which is what I thought.
After Dad's gone off, Becky gets up before Ma and I fix her a bowl of Cheerios, put her sneakers on so she won't stub her toes, and brush the snarls from her hair. Read once in a book about how some kids earned money babysitting. Boy, if I ever got paid even a nickel for every time I've taken care of Becky, Daryl Lynn too, I'd have a lot of dollars. I do a whole bunch of jobs that other kids, other places get paid to do, but it wouldn't ever occur to me to ask for pay. If I asked Dad, he'd say,
"You live in this house, boy?"
And when I'd say yes, he'd say,
"Then you do your share like the rest of us."
Which is why I never asked. "More Cheerios," says Becky, and all the while I'm making her breakfast, I'm thinking the best route to take to find aluminum cans. By the time Daryl Lynn gets up, wearing one of Dad's old T-shirts for her nightgown, I'd figured how I could double my can count. But when Ma gets up a few minutes later, she takes one look at me and guesses what I'm thinking. "You got that dog on your mind," she says, lifting the big iron skillet to the stovetop and laying some bacon in it. "Thinking don't cost nothing," I tell her. She just gives me a little smile then and sets about making my bacon crisp the way I like it, and we don't say any more about Judd's dog. Must walk 5 miles that morning, and all I find is 7 cans and 1 bottle. When Dad comes home about 4, he hasn't found anybody looking for help either. But he says,
"The Sears fall catalog come in this afternoon, Marty. You got nothing better to do tomorrow. You could ride my route with me, help deliver them."
I say yes to that. No, I won't get nothing more out of it than a soft drink at the gas station, but I like going around in the Jeep, riding over back roads like Rippin' Tuck and Cowhouse Run Road with Dad. Can take a bag with me just in case, pick up any cans or bottles I happen to see. That night, Dad and I sit out on the porch. Ma's in the swing behind us, shelling lima beans for next day, and Becky and Daryl Lynn's in the grass, catching lightning bugs and putting them in a jar. Dad laughs at the way Becky squeals when she gets a bug in her hand. But seeing those bugs in a jar reminds me of Shiloh, all chained up at Judd's, a prisoner as sure as those bugs. Truth is, about everything reminds me of Shiloh. You once get a dog to look at you the way Shiloh looked at me, you don't forget it. "Got 17, Daryl Lynn shouts. "Aren't they pretty, Ma?" "Almost could turn off the electricity and let him light the kitchen," Ma says.
"You gonna let him go?"
I ask. Daryl Lynn shrugs.
"They'll die if you keep them in a jar," I tell her.
Becky, she comes over and crawls onto my lap. "We'll let him go, Marty," she says, and kisses me on the neck. A butterfly kiss, she calls it. Bats her eyelashes against my skin. Feels like a moth's wings. She laughs, and I laugh. Then, far off, I hear a dog. Leastwise, I think it's a dog. Might could be a fox cub, but I think Shiloh. "You hear that?" I ask Dad.
"Just a hound complaining," is all he says.
Next morning, Dad gives me a nudge when he comes through to the kitchen, and I'm up like a shot. We ride to Sistersville, and I haul all those catalogs out to the Jeep while Dad cases mail. Not everybody gets a catalog, of course, but anyone who places an order with Sears during the year gets one, so there's lots to load up. By 9:15, we're on the route. Dad pulls the Jeep up close to the mailboxes, and I stuff the mail in, turn up the little red flag on the side, if there is one. Some folks even wait down at the box. And then you feel real bad if you don't have anything for them. Dad knows everybody's name, though, and he always takes time to say a little something.
"Morning, Bill,"
he says to an old man whose face lights up like Christmas when we stop.
"How's the wife doing?"
"About the same,"
the man says.
"Well, this catalog's sure going to cheer her."
And he sets off for his house, mail tucked under his arm. People even leave something in their boxes once in a while for Dad. Mrs. Ellison always leaves a little loaf of banana bread or a cinnamon roll, and Dad saves it to eat with his lunch. After we finish Sistersville, we do the friendly route. But as the Jeep gets up near Shiloh, my heart starts to pound. I'm thinking of closing my eyes tight in case the dog's around. If I see his eyes looking at me, they'll just drive me crazy. I can hear dogs barking when we're a half mile off from Judd Travers' trailer. Dogs can pick up the sound of a Jeep that quick. I get Judd's mail ready for him. He hasn't got any catalog coming, But he's got two other magazines that'll probably warm his heart. Guns and Ammo and Shooting Times. Why don't he take a magazine about dogs, I'm thinking? Teach him how to be kind? All the dogs is chained when we get to his place, so none are waiting for us at the box. But Judd is. He's got a big old sickle. He's cutting weeds along his side of the road. "Morning," Dad says as the Jeep pulls up. Judd straightens his back. His shirt's all soaked with sweat, and he wears this brown handkerchief tied around his forehead to keep the sweat from running in his eyes.
"How you doing, Ray?"
he says, and comes over to the Jeep with his hand out. I give him his mail, and he even stinks like sweat. I know everybody sweats, and everybody's sweat stinks, but seems to me Judd's sweat stinks worse than anyone's. Mean sweat.
"How come you aren't at work?" Dad says.
"You think this ain't work?"
Judd answers, then laughs.
"Got me a week of vacation coming, so I take a day now and then. This Friday I'm going hunting again. Take the dogs up on the ridge, see if I can get me some rabbit. Possum, maybe. I haven't had me a possum dinner for some time."
"Dogs okay?"
Dad asks, and I know he's asking for me.
"Lean and mean," says Judd. "Keep 'em half-starved, they'll hunt better."
"You gotta keep 'em healthy, though, or you won't have 'em long,"
Dad says. I know he's saying that for me, too.
"Lose one, I'll buy another,"
Judd tells him. I can't help myself. I lean out the window where I can see his face real good. Big, round face, whiskers on his cheeks and chin where he hasn't shaved his face for 5 days. Tight little eyes looking down on me beneath his bushy brows. "That dog that followed me home the other day," I say. "He okay?"
"He's learning," Judd says. "Didn't give him an ounce of supper that night. Just put him where he could watch the others eat. Teach him not to wander off. I got him back in the shed right now."
My stomach hurts for Shiloh. "That dog," I say again. "What's his name?" Judd just laughs, and his teeth's dark where the tobacco juice oozes through.
"Hasn't got a name. Never name any of my dogs. Dogs 1, 2, 3, and 4 is all. When I want 'em, I whistle. When I don't, I give 'em a kick. Get, scram, out, and damn it." "That's my dog's names."
And he laughs, making the fat on his belly shake. I'm so mad, I can't see. I know I should shut my mouth, but it goes on talking. "His name's Shiloh," I say. Judd looks down at me and spits sideways. Studies me a good long time. Then shrugs as the Jeep moves forward again and on along the river.
"Marty," Dad says when we're around the bend.
"Well, sometimes you haven't got the sense to shut up. You can't go telling a man what to call his dog."
But I'm mad, too. Better than calling him Git or Scram.
"Judd Travers has the right to name his dog anything he likes or nothing at all, and you've got to get it through your head that it's his dog, not yours, and put your mind to other things."
The Jeep bounces along for a good long mile before I speak again. "I can't, Dad," I say finally. And this time, his voice is gentle.
"Well, son, you gotta try."
I eat my peanut butter and soda cracker sandwiches with Dad at noon, plus the zucchini bread Mrs. Ellison had left in her mailbox for him. And after all the Sears catalogs and mail is delivered, we head back to the Sistersville post office. I get my Coca-Cola at the gas station while Dad finishes up, and we start home. I forget all about looking for cans and bottles. The can I'm holding is the only one I got. "Judd Travers goes hunting near every weekend, don't he?" I ask Dad.
"I suppose he does."
"You can shoot at just about anything that moves."
"Of course not. You can only shoot at what's in season."
I'm thinking how, about a year ago, I was fooling around up on the ridge and come across a dead dog. A dead beagle with a hole in its head. Never said anything because what was there to say? Somebody out hunting got a dog by mistake, I figured. It happens. But the more I think on it now, I wonder if it wasn't Judd Travers, shooting a dog on purpose, shooting one of his own dogs that didn't please him. Dad's still talking.
We've got a new game warden in the county, and I hear he's plenty tough. Used to be a man could kill a deer on his own property any time if that deer was eating his garden. Warden would look the other way. But they tell me the new warden will find you good. Well, that's the way it ought to be, I guess.
What if a man shoots a dog? I ask. Dad looks over at me.
Dogs aren't ever in season, Marty. Now, you know that.
But what if a man shoots one anyway?
That would be up to the sheriff to decide what to do, I guess.
The next day, I start early and set out on the main road to Friendly with a plastic bag. Get me 11 aluminum cans, but that's all. Could walk my legs off for a year and not even have enough to buy half a dog. The questions I'd tried not to think about before come back to me now. Would Judd Travers want to sell Shiloh at all? And how much would he want for him if he did? And even if I got Shiloh for my very own, how was I supposed to feed him? There aren't many leftover scraps of anything in our house. Every extra bite of pork chop or boiled potato or spoonful of peas gets made into soup. If we'd had enough money for me to have a dog and buy its food and pay the vet and everything, I would have had one by now. Daryl Lynn's been begging for a cat for over a year. It isn't that we're rock poor. Trouble is that Grandma Preston's got real feeble, and she's being cared for by Dad's sister over in Clarksburg. Have to have nurses any time Aunt Hetty gets out, and every spare cent we got goes to pay for Grandma's care. Nothing left over to feed a dog. But I figure to get to that problem later on. I wonder if maybe, in time, if I never see Shiloh again, I'll forget about him. But then I'm lying on the couch that night after everyone else has gone to bed, and I hear this far-off sound again. It's like a dog crying. Not barking, not howling, not whining even. Crying. And I get this awful ache in my chest. I wonder if it is a dog. If it's Shiloh. I know you want a dog, Marty, Ma says to me on Thursday. She's sitting at the kitchen table with cardboard boxes all around her, folding a stack of letters and putting them in envelopes. Ma gets work to do here at home any time she can. I wish we had the money so every one of you kids could have a pet. But with Grandma seeming to need more care, we just don't. And that's that. I nod. Ma knows me better than I know myself sometimes, but she don't have this straight. I don't want just any dog. I want Shiloh, because he needs me. Needs me bad. It's Friday morning when I hear the sound. Dad's off on his mail route. Daryl Lynn and Becky's watching cartoons on TV. Ma's out on the back porch washing clothes in the old washing machine that don't work. Only the wringer part works if you turn it by hand. I'm sitting at the table eating a piece of bread spread with lard and jam. When I hear the noise, I know it's Shiloh. Only the softest kind of noise, and right close. I fold the bread up, jelly to the inside, stick it in my pocket, and go out the front door. Shiloh's under the sycamore, head on his paws, just like the day he followed me home in the rain. Soon as I see him, I know two things. One, Judd Travers has taken his dogs out hunting, like he said, and Shiloh's run away from the pack. And two, I'm not going to take him back. Not now, not ever. I don't have time to think how I had promised Judd if I ever saw Shiloh loose again, I'd bring him back. Don't even think what I'm going to tell Dad. All I know right then is that I have to get Shiloh away from the house where none of the family will see him. I run barefoot down the front steps and over to where Shiloh's lying, his tail just thumping like crazy in the grass. Shiloh, I whisper and gather him up in my arms. His body is shaking all over, but he don't try to get away. Don't creep off from me the way he did that first day. I hold him as close and careful as I carry Becky when she's asleep, and I start off up the far hill into the woods, carrying my dog. I know that if I was to see Judd Travers that very minute with his rifle, I'd tell him he'd have to shoot me before I'd ever let him near Shiloh again. There are burrs and stickers on the path up the hill, and usually I wouldn't take it without sneakers. But if there's burrs and stickers in my feet, I hardly feel them. No Judd Travers and his hounds won't be over here, because this hill belongs to my dad. Get me as far as the shad bush next to the pine, and then I sit down and hug Shiloh. First time I really have him to myself. First time I can hug him. Nobody looking. Just squeeze his thin body, pat his head, stroke his ears. Shiloh, I tell him, as though he knows it's his name. Judd Travers isn't never going to kick you again. And the way his eyes look at me then, the way he reaches up and licks my face, it's like it seals the promise. I'd made a promise to Judd Travers I wasn't going to keep. Jesus help me. But I'm making one to Shiloh that I will. God strike me dead. I set him down at last and go over to the creek for a drink of water. Shiloh follows along beside me. I cup my hands and drink, and Shiloh helps himself, lapping it up. Now what? I ask myself. The problem is looking me square in the face. I got to keep Shiloh a secret. That much I know. But I'm not going to keep him chained. Only thing I can think of is to make him a pen. I don't like the idea of it, but I'll be with him as much as I can. I take him back to the shad bush, and Shiloh lays down. Shiloh, I say, patting his head, stay. He thumps his tail. I start to walk away, looking back. Shiloh gets up. Stay, I say again, louder, and point to the ground. He lays back down, but I know he's like to follow anyways. So I pull him over to a pine tree, take the belt off my jeans, loop it through the raggedy old collar Shiloh's wearing, and fasten the belt to the tree. Shiloh don't like it much, but he's quiet. I go down the path, and every so often I turn around. Shiloh is looking at me like he won't never see me again. But he don't bark. Strangest thing I ever see in a dog. To be that still. Ma's still on the back porch. When she washes, it takes her near all day. Darylin and Becky stuck to the TV. So I go to the shed by the side of the house, and I take the extra fencing Dad used when we had us more chickens. I take me a piece of wire, too, and go back up the hill. Shiloh's still there, and he don't try to get up while I set to work. I string the fencing around the trunks of three small trees for corner posts, and then back to the pine tree again, where I fasten it with wire. Pen measures about 6 by 8 feet. I go back down to the shed again, and this time I get the old rotten planks Dad took out of the back steps when he put in the new. Pick me up an old pie tin, too. I take the planks up to Shiloh's pen and make him a lean-to at one end to protect him from rain. Fill the pie tin with water so's he'll have something to drink. Last of all, I take the lard bread from my pocket and feed it to Shiloh in little pieces, letting him lick my fingers after every bite. I wrap my arms around him, pat him, run my hands over his ears, even kiss his nose. I tell him about 1,000,000 times I love him as much as I love my ma. The worry part is whether or not he'll stay quiet. I'm hoping he will, 'cause he was a silent dog to begin with, but all the way back down the hill to the house, I put my finger to my lips and turn back. Shh, I say. Shiloh, he don't make a sound, like he had the bark beat out of him when he was a pup, and it just never come back. I'm tense as a cricket that night. Tense when Dad drives up in his Jeep, afraid the dog will bark. Tense when Daryl Lynn and Becky are out in the yard playing after dinner, squealing and yelling, afraid that Shiloh will want to get in on the fun and maybe dig a hole under the fence. He never comes. I manage to take a piece of potato and some cornbread up to him before it gets dark. I sit down in his pen with him, and he crawls all over me, licking my face. If he'd been a cat, he would have purred. He was that glad to see me. Tell him I'm coming back tomorrow with some kind of leash for him. Tell him we're going to run all over that hill, him and me, every day. Tell him he's my dog now, and I'm not never going to let anybody hurt him again, ever. And then I leave, wiring that fence good. I go home and sleep a full night. First time in a long while. I got to take one problem at a time, I tell myself. Problem number one, where to keep Shiloh hid? Solved. Problem number two, would Shiloh be quiet? Yes, he would. Problem number three, how am I going to get food out of the house enough to feed Shiloh twice a day without Ma noticing? The next morning, before breakfast, as soon as Dad's gone, I take a biscuit from the kitchen and a rope from the shed outside and run up the far hill before Ma and Daryl Lynn and Becky get out of bed. This time, Shiloh's on his feet waiting for me, tail going like a windshield wiper, fast speed. A soft yip of pure joy cuts off quick when I say shh, but as soon as I'm in the pen, Shiloh's leaping up almost shoulder high to lick my cheek, nuzzling my hands, my thighs. He gulps down the biscuit I give him. Once more, I can tell, but he don't bark. Seems to know he's safe only as long as he's quiet. I tie the rope to his collar. Shiloh boy, we're going for a run, I tell him. To get in and out of Shiloh's pen, I got to unfasten the piece of wire that holds the fencing against the trunk of the pine, then move the fencing aside long enough to slip out. Shiloh lets me go through first, he follows, and then we're both together, like a six-legged animal, pounding along up the path, legs bumping, Shiloh leaping up to lick my hand. I let go of the rope and let Shiloh run free for a while. If he goes ahead even a few steps, he stops and looks back to see if I'm coming. If he stops to sniff at a tree or bush and I go on by, his feet pound double time to catch up. Just out of the woods, on the other side of the hill, there's a meadow, and I slump down in the grass to rest. Shiloh's all over me, licking my face sloppy wet. I giggle and roll over on my stomach, covering my head and neck with my arms. Shiloh whines and nudges his nose under my shoulder, working to roll me over. I laugh and turn on my back, pulling Shiloh down onto my chest. And for a while, we both lay there, panting, enjoying the sunshine, belonging to each other.
"What do you do today, Marty?" Dad asks as he gets out of his Jeep late that evening.
"Oh, looked for groundhogs up on the hill. Fooled around," I tell him.
"How's the can collecting coming?"
Found some a couple days ago.
"Saw some bottles in the ditch down near Doc Murphy's," Dad says.
"I'll go take a look," I tell him, and set out with my bag. I have to keep on collecting cans, enough to cover some money for meat and bones from the grocer down in Friendly. The bigger Shiloh grows, the more he'll eat. When I get back home, supper's on the table, and I slip into my chair just as Dad asks the blessing.
"Dear Lord, we thank you for the food you provided for our table. Bless it to nourish the good within us. Amen."
Ma picks up the meatloaf and passes it around, and the meal begins. I eat about half my supper, then say, "I've been getting this sort of full feeling at dinner, Ma, and then I'm hungry again before I go to bed." Ma don't even look up.
"Well, don't eat so much at dinner then, and eat again before bedtime."
"Food'll be all gone by then."
"There's always cornflakes or something."
"But I get hungry for meat and potatoes later."
"Save some back then."
"Daryl Lynn'll eat it."
"For goodness sake, Marty," says Ma.
"Who wants cold meatloaf?" Daryl Lynn says. Forks continue clinking on the table. Becky keeps on digging her fork in her boiled potato. No one looks up. No one pauses. No one even questions. Easy as falling off a log. I get up from the table finally and put some of my meatloaf and half a potato on a saucer. "I'm putting this in the fridge, Daryl Lynn," I say. "Don't you go picking at it."
"I won't. I told you," she says.
I go into the other room and sit down on the sofa. So far, so good.
"You seem restless, Marty,"
Ma calls.
Me? "Heck no. I got lots to do."
"Where's David Howard this summer? Haven't seen him around."
"Think he went to Tennessee to visit his uncle." "Fred? Michael?"
"Haven't seen Fred."
"Michael's gone to some kind of camp."
"You're not lonely?"
"How can I be lonely with the whole outdoors to play in?" I answer.
Wish they'd get off my back.
"You can ride along to work with me again any time you want," says Dad.
I pick up the comic book I bought a few weeks back.
"I want to go. I'll let you know," I tell him.
Gradually, the kitchen clatter dies down. Dad belches and goes out on the back porch to look at the sky, same as he always does. Becky's fooling with her food, and Ma sends her away from the table. Darylin giggles at Becky and gets asked to clear the dishes. I wait till everyone is out of the kitchen and sitting around on the back porch to catch the breeze. As usual, Becky and Darryl Lynn whoop and tumble around in the grass, glad for an audience. And after I sit a respectable amount of time, I say, I think I'll take my 22 and go up the far hill a while.
What you figure on shooting this time of evening? Dad asks.
Just working on my aim, I tell him. See how good I can hit when the light's dim? Don't you ever, never aim your gun toward this house or yard, Ma says. I'll point it dead away, I promise. I go back inside for my gun, slip the leftover food from the saucer into a little plastic sack, and set off up the hill, the sounds of my sister's shouts and giggles behind me. Again, as I get near the pen, I hear soft, happy yips. But soon as I say shh, the noise stops. The only sound you can hear is the swishing of Shiloh's tail hitting the fence, the soft pad of his paws as he leaps up in the air in sheer, pure happiness. The sloppy slap of his jowls together as he gobbles down the supper I've brought him, and then he commences to slobber love all over me as well. I unhook the wire, push the fence open, and lead Shiloh to the stream for a drink, filling the pie pan with fresh water. When I lead him back to the pen again, I can tell he's disappointed, wanted to go for a run, but I give him enough hugging and squeezing and petting to last the night, with the promise of another run through the meadow the next day. I'm halfway down the hill when I remember I haven't fired my gun once and wonder if Dad will say anything. By the time I reach the back porch, though, the whole family's facing down the driveway. 'Cause there's the sound of a truck motor growing louder and louder. I stop in my tracks, fingers tightening around my gun. Dad, sitting on the edge of the porch, leans forward so he can see.
Looks like Judd Travers' pickup, he says.
My chest feels tight like I'm having trouble breathing. The truck pulls up by the side of the house, and the door swings open.
Evening,
Dad calls out, as Judd, wearing his old western-style boots with a sharp heel, gets out and comes over.
Evening, he says.
You had dinner? Ma asks. I got some leftovers I could heat up real quick.
I had me some ribs already, he says. Ain't looking for a meal, Mrs. Preston. Well, I'm looking for a dog.
He sure don't waste any time getting to the point. Now my heart's really pounding.
That new dog of yours run off again?
Dad asks him.
I swear to God, I find him this time, I'm going to break his legs, Judd says and spits.
Oh, come on, Judd. A dog with four broke legs ain't no dog to you at all.
He's no dog to me at all, the way he keeps running off. It's the fourth time he's left the pack when I had him out hunting. I gotta teach him a lesson, whip him good, and starve him lean. Wondered if you'd seen him.
I sure didn't see him on my route today, and you know if I had, I'd have put him in the jeep and brought him to you straight away, says Dad.
What about that boy of yours? Think he's seen him?
Dad had heard me coming back from the hill, and he turns around.
Marty?
I stand rooted to the ground at the side of the house.
What? Come on around here. Judd's dog's missing again. He wants to know, have you seen him?
His dog? Here in this yard? Haven't seen any dog of any kind in our yard all day, I say, coming a few steps closer. Judd is sure studying me hard. So is Dad.
Well, how about when you went out looking for bottles, Dad asks. You see him then?
Nope. My voice is stronger now. Saw that big German Shepherd of Baker's that gets loose sometimes, and saw a little old gray dog, but sure didn't see that beagle.
Well, you keep an eye out sharp, Judd says. And if you see him, you throw a rope around him, drag him over. Here?
I only look at him. Can't speak. Can't even nod my head. I wouldn't never promise him that.
You hear what he asked you, Marty? Says Dad.
I nod my head. Yes, I heard all right.
Okay, then, Judd says, and gets back in his pickup.
You had any luck hunting yesterday?
Dad calls after him.
A rabbit. Saw a groundhog, but didn't get it. That new dog hadn't run off. He would have got it for me. He wasn't such a good hunting dog, I would have shot him by now.
The sheriff would get on you if you do something like that, Judd.
Law never told me before what I could do with my dogs. Won't be telling me now,
Judd says. He laughs, waves his hand, starts the engine, and the pickup pulls away. Night in West Virginia is as dark as black can be. No car lights sweeping across my walls or ceiling, like when I stay overnight with David Howard down in Friendly. No street lamps shining in the windows. No lights from next door houses. Where I live, there ain't no street lamps at all. No house close enough to see from my windows. My eyes are open anyway. I stare up into the darkness of the living room, and the darkness stares back. I'm remembering how once, several years ago, when Ma bought milk chocolate rabbits one Easter for me and Daryl Lynn, I'd finished eating mine, but Daryl Lynn took only a nibble of hers every day or so, keeping it up on her dresser in its pink and yellow tinfoil, driving me nuts. And one day, I just crept in there and ate off one of that rabbit's ears.